Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Welcome to episode 151 of the podcast, everybody, with Dan Prosser and Andrew Frankel. A different episode this week. Partly because we're together, that's unusual on its own, but we're also in the car.
Yes.
We haven't done this before.
It's 6 o'clock on a Monday morning and I'm driving down the M4.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's very early in the morning. The old grey matter might not be sparking just yet, certainly not mine. But we're in the car. Now, I think we've chosen a reasonable car for this. We're in a Lexus LC500. Which is at least a fairly refined, civilised, quietish car.
Quietish, yes.
So hopefully there won't be too much background noise. Better, I would suggest, than the Alpine A110 you're running at the moment.
Does have a naturally aspirated V8 in the front.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's good, actually, because later on we are going to be talking about the best-sounding engine configuration.
Ooh!
And clearly
it's almost like we planned it.
I know. And clearly the NA V8 is up there. I hope you all heard that well. So, I mean, we're doing this now because we're actually on our way to photograph a couple of very special cars for the Intercooler for a story coming soon. And a video, actually. So it's worth it. It's worth getting up early and schlepping across the country. But we're doing this now because this was actually our only opportunity to record a podcast after the first round of the 2023 F1 season. So we had the Bahrain Grand Prix yesterday, and we thought it would be a good idea to save this recording until after, because, well, it's going to be such a competitive season, isn't it, Andrew?
It's going to be amazing. It's never been so close to the front, have we?
How many times? We're on the record several times of saying it's going to be closer, fight for the championship.
What do we know?
Mercedes are not going to drop the ball again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure you all know Max Verstappen won the Bahrain Grand Prix in his Red Bull very comfortably ahead of his teammate. The Mercedes were nowhere. The Ferraris were not on Red Bull's pace, and one of them, Leclerc's car, failed. I tweeted from the TI Twitter account, if it wasn't for those flying Aston Martins, you would think this was the 23rd round of the 2022 season, because the narrative just sort of spilled over.
You would, and you know, and I think the ominous thing is, you know, he was dropping Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari at a second a lap, and my guess is that after about three of those laps, he was probably just.
Yeah.
I think he probably already had. He'd already backed off. I mean, if you looked at what he was able to do, the gap he was able to maintain, whether he was on the soft tyre or the hard tyre, they didn't have any mediums. I don't think the medium was particularly favoured. He was so on top of it. I mean, there was a bit in commentary on Sky yesterday where Crofty was sort of saying, oh, well, you know, they're going to have to do two stints on hard tyres. And Martin Brundle was saying, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter. You know, they have got, well, certainly Max has such an advantage He can do what he likes.
Yeah.
He can come in, he can do as many pit stops as he likes. So they're almost, for him, there is almost no need for strategy. Because he's just...
The speed is there.
The speed is there. Speed. And strategy only becomes really, really important when it's marginal. Because strategy is not going to put you... I mean, he finished 50 seconds ahead of the fastest Mercedes.
Yeah.
I think it was a 57-lap race.
Yeah.
It's almost a second a lap.
Yeah.
Most of which, almost all of which, he would have just been cruising.
Yeah.
And he dropped the Mercedes at a second a lap. I mean, that's... Oh, I mean, I'm not having an opinion on whether, you know, I know lots of people love Max, and I know an awful lot of people don't love Max. And I'm not saying anything in another direction. What I am saying is it does not bode well for this season.
No, it really, really doesn't.
And we got it spectacular. I came on this podcast and I was going, you watch, guys, you just watch, because, you know, Mercedes, they never drop the ball twice. They're going to be right up there. And yeah, okay, Red Bulls are going to come on, but they have such a good car, they can't really develop much further. And the Ferraris, well, they're not going to completely cock it up again, are they? So,
just watch.
Don't listen to us.
Well, I thought the same. It's hard to know where to start. Well, let's just cover off Ferrari, because...
Yeah.
Neither in qualifying nor in the race did they have the pace of the Red Bulls.
No.
And watching Leclerc's car grind to a halt halfway or two-thirds of the way through the race, whatever it was just so familiar, wasn't it, from last season?
It was. And, you know, and I think the worry about Ferrari is, you know, they haven't even got... You know, the ultimate qualifying pace of Max. I mean, Charles did a very, very good job in qualifying. But there's such a difference, isn't there, between, you know, a lap and a race.
Yeah.
And they just haven't got the race pace at all. You know, once, you know, and actually I think it was quite a smart decision, a smart strategy decision from Ferrari, who'd have thought it, but to throw qualifying.
Yeah.
To not send Charles out for that second run. So that he had a new set of softs, which, you know, he could try and get the drop on Max. And okay, fine, he got the drop on Perez, but Max was gone.
Yeah. So as Brundle said, tyres, strategy, it just didn't matter.
He was gone.
Yeah.
Now I don't think at this stage, and you know, after one round of a 23-round season, you can say definitively it is over, because, you know, we know that different tracks do different things, and maybe someone will get their shit together. But, I mean, it's... The problem was he didn't just win the race, did he? He walked it.
Yeah, he did. He cruised it.
And how much do you think of that? How much do you think of it? Because Checo didn't walk it, did he? I mean, Checo, I think, would have been beaten by Leclerc if he'd kept going.
Yeah.
So how much do you think of it is Max, and how significant do you think the fact that Perez appears to be unable to really play that number two role could be over a season? I mean, maybe you could have a situation where Ferrari really get their stuff together and they, you know, they come second and third a lot and pick up the odd win, that they could be at least be somewhere in the constructors. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you think I'm just kind of like hoping?
Well, I think it's too early really to make any kind of judgment after round one. But my gut instinct is that the Red Bull is further ahead than it's ever been. And I don't think I remember a more dominant first round of the season. Particularly when we've all been expecting a much more competitive one. I have to say, I think, based on what we saw yesterday, 2023 could be a more dominant season for Max and Red Bull than 2022. Which is frightening. I mean, Max won, 15 races last year? And the only reason he didn't completely dominate from start to finish is that they had reliability problems right at the start of the season.
At the start of the season, yeah. I mean, I think he DNF'd in two out of the first three races, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
So they've put those troubles behind them, and they've still got the pay. I don't know. It's staggering, actually. And it's actually a bit gutting, isn't it, as a fan of the sport, a spectator? You want competition. And one team, and particularly one driver, streets ahead of the rest.
I mean, it feels to me, and you'll remember this because you were -8 at the time, it feels like 1978 when Lotus appeared with a thing called Lotus 79 and this concept called ground effect.
Yeah.
And literally, from the start of the season, everybody else thought... Actually, I don't think 79 was there right at the start of the season, but whenever it turned up,
yeah,
everybody else knew that until they did that... They were nowhere.
Yeah.
And the only thing they could hope for, and it actually happened quite a bit, was for a little bit of, you know, traditional Lotus unreliability.
Yeah.
And that was literally, their chances of a championship, or their chance of winning a race, basically depended on the Lotus braking. That was it.
Yeah.
Red Bull ain't going to brake, is it?
No. No, it's not.
It has that feel about it. And the other thing that worries me is, sorry to say doom and gloom about this, but if this was this time last year, and you're thinking to yourself, well, new season, completely new rule book, everybody's trying to get their head around it, everybody is playing catch up, there's still something to play for. You know, maybe Red Bull have arrived at the beginning of the season and they've done the best job so far, but maybe other people have got developments because they're still trying to figure out this rule book. Well, everybody's figured it out now,
yeah.
Or they should have done.
Yeah.
They've had a year to think about it. They've had specifically a winter to do all the things that they were unable to do last year. And I think they're further ahead than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they are.
Or one of them is.
Yeah. It is just staggering. We'll come on to Mercedes in a moment, but first of all, you don't do this because you're driving, but a round of applause to Aston Martin.
Absolutely.
Seriously.
I mean, where has that come from?
Yeah. They were, in qualifying, the fastest Aston was 2.5 seconds quicker than last year.
I mean, okay, some of that's Fernando, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to know, and maybe someone can tell us, if a team has ever shown that pace increase without a rule change, just an evolution from one season to the next, has suddenly gone 2.5 seconds quicker.
Yeah, because the Honda to Braun was a big rule change, wasn't it? Not an enormous rule change, but there was
But it had a different engine, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
So it went from a Honda to a Mercedes engine, and also they had the double diffuser, maybe there is something on the Aston Martin which nobody else has figured out. I kind of hope so, with all other things being equal, so far as we are aware, I don't know of a single team that has ever shown that kind of increase in form just from one season to the next. It's unbelievable. And also, I'm driving, so I won't clap. I think a round of applause to Stroll as well, because this guy, the son of the business owner, he has had so much, so much insinuated against him. But actually, given that he's just come back from, was it 12, say surgery 12 days ago or something? And given who his teammate is now, to get that close in those conditions, I think, fair play. I really, really do.
Yeah, and it's not like he was, at the tail of that front pack. He beat one of the Mercedes. He finished ahead of Russell. So a fine performance from Lance Stroll. Fair play to them. Fair play to Aston Martin. Fernando on the podium. He was racing like the best of them, wasn't he? Like, he was
and that's the thing, it isn't just the Aston Martin. You look at the way he got past Lewis.
Yeah.
I mean, he got past the most successful and certainly, according to our readers, greatest Formula 1 driver of all time, and he knew he wasn't just going to be able to just do the conventional DRS. He knew he had to do something which Lewis just wasn't expecting. It was so good to watch those two. They've got a combined age of something beginning with an 8, I think, close to it. And just to watch them out there, and just to the skill of both of them to race that close in those conditions, and it was one of, frankly, not enough really entertaining, exciting moments from that race.
Yeah. People are calling the Aston Martin the Green Bull because it is. I'm not going to say it's a facsimile of the Red Bull, but it copies or takes significant inspiration from the Red Bull design philosophy. It's going around a little bit, but and why not? Because the Red Bull was the gun car last year. Why not copy it? Why not do what they do? And the major point is that Dan Fallows, a former Red Bull aerodynamicist working under Adrian Newey, is now leading the way at Aston Martin. And I think a few other engineers went with him as well. And they've done what Red Bull have done and produced, by the looks of it, a mega quick car by doing so.
Yeah, but they've got the back end of a Mercedes, haven't they?
They have, yeah.
So they've got the powertrain and the gearbox and the rear suspension off the Mercedes.
Yeah.
And also, They use, I mean, at the moment, I think they're having their own tunnel built, but they use Mercedes tunnels, don't they?
They do. Yeah, so what odds of there being a Mercedes employee lurking in the background next time the Aston runs through the wind tunnel?
I'm guessing there are rules about that.
I'm sure there are.
And Aston Martin will be in a position where, you know, they are a Mercedes customer team.
Yeah.
Obviously the Aston Martin race team is effectively the Lawrence Stroll race team, and Aston Martin brand it. But nevertheless, you know, Mercedes is a major shareholder of Aston Martin, the car company. Mercedes go, wouldn't mind a quick peek at the old data.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they're allowed to do that.
No.
Are Aston going to go, on your bike, chum? I don't know.
But it's a closer relationship than Red Bull Mercedes, isn't it? Much closer.
You're just a bit, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, well, congratulations to Red Bull, to Aston Martin, as we say. But Mercedes, so they persevered with their fundamental car concept from last year.
Yeah.
Thinking that through the winter they could get it to a point where it's competitive. Now, they've made progress because the thing wasn't leaping up and down, it wasn't porpoising like it was before.
Yeah.
Which is something. But there's no pace in the car.
To an extent, and this will sound weird, I think the fact that it's not porpoising is almost bad news, and I'll say why. Because when it was porpoising, they knew what the problem was.
They
thought, and I think that they had every right to think that they had a really quick car if they could just unlock the speed, and if they could stop the bloody thing jumping up and down, they'd be up there. And by the end of the race, by the end of the season, let's not forget, they were pretty competitive and they won a race. This year, my understanding is the car did everything they expected it to do. It is absolutely the car they expected it to be. You know, they had all their targets. It's hit all their targets. And what they appeared to have failed to appreciate is just how far everybody else would move in the same time. And where they are now, I suspect, is where they expected and hoped to be at the beginning of last season. They're a year behind, and everybody else has moved on. That, given that there is no apparent fundamental problem with the car, you know, Lewis just says, oh, it just hasn't got any downforce. We just need more downforce. Because I think it's okay on the brakes, I think it's okay in slow corners, I think it's okay on the straights. It's just in the quick stuff that it really, really struggles. That's really hard to get back. Really hard. And when you are a second a lap off a cruising max, I mean, that is...
doesn't bode well.
It really doesn't.
And maybe the most extraordinary part of it all is that even after qualifying, Toto Wolff had come out and said, yeah, I don't think this car's ever going to be competitive.
I don't know what to think about that. I mean, can you imagine the effect on morale in the team?
Yeah.
Because, you know, those guys would have worked as hard as anybody else. And, you know, and it may be that their concept was wrong. But you bust your chops. You were basically, you bust your chops all last year for really precious little by the standards from which you are used to. And then you do it again all over the winter, and you have one bad race, and your boss comes out and goes, well, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, throw the car away, start again. You must just think, what was it all for?
Yes.
All that work, all that hope, all that expectation. And then... I thought it was a very strange thing to say in public.
Mm.
Just from a point of view of being a team leader and trying to keep the troops, you know, motivated and keep morale good. You know, to come out at the end of, you know, with 22 races left to go, to come out and go, well, it's just rubbish, and we can't fix it. You know, maybe even if that's the truth, I wouldn't have said that. I would have just come out and go, well, okay, we've clearly got a lot of work to do, and you know, at least have presented the front of, you know, of being, you know, battered but unbowed and bullish and optimistic. Because I don't think that teams get over their problems by being told they're rubbish.
No. There are going to be some long, glum faces turning up to Brackley this morning.
Yeah.
And yeah, in other interviews, Toto was saying that he believes it's not just development that they need now; they need radical change.
So, if you're Toto, do you bin the car now? Do you go, okay, fine, we're going to effectively, we'll do what we can, we'll pick up the points that we can, but are we going to? Because you know the other problem is the budget cap.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah,
they can't just go. You know, even Mercedes-Benz with very, very, very deep pocket can't just go, oh, we'll just throw money at the problem. We'll just develop next... We'll just get this whole other team of people to develop next year's car. They're limited on staff and they're limited on funds. And so, you know, they can't do that. So, I don't know what they do. If you truly believe that you will never close the gap, do you spend all that time and money developing a car which you know can't win? Or do you just go... I mean, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, you're accountable to sponsors, you're accountable to a very large car manufacturer, you're accountable to your millions of fans the world over, none of whom want to see you just go, oh, well, sod it, there's no point.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to know. I mean, do they forget this concept, switch, if it's even possible, switch to a more Red Bull style concept, and just research and develop that throughout this year? With a view to next year. It's extraordinary that we're already discussing the possibility of Mercedes throwing this year.
But even then, even if they do that, do they not then run the risk of a repeat performance and find themselves at the beginning of next year where everybody else was at the beginning of this year?
Well, that's the danger, and I guess that's why they stuck with their original concept, because they must truly believe that there is potential in there. And if you just do what Red Bull have done, are you permanently a year behind?
Yeah, but yes, indeed. But the point is they think, as I'm my understanding, they think that they've unlocked the potential. They think this car is doing what it's meant to do, and it's just what it's meant to do. Just is not as good as everything else. Yeah,
it's amazing, isn't it? I really, really thought they'd be back with a bang. I really thought they would be.
This is a good time to mention again that I got £20 on George Russell to be the world champion. I mean. Oh my goodness, what was I thinking of? I was thinking of 8-1, that's why I did it. I thought 8-1, and I just thought, well, Mercedes, they're not going to drop the ball twice, and I would back over a season George to come out ahead of Lewis as he did last year. Well, I mean, I got that wrong both counts as far as from what we could see from Bahrain. I mean, yeah, George just had quite a sort of quiet race, didn't he?
He didn't do anything.
But also, you know, okay, let's just talk about Lewis for a little bit. I mean, you know, he drove beautifully. He made no mistakes. He was, you know, the usual elder statesman on the blur at the end of the race, saying, "Come on, guys, you know, it wasn't what we wanted, but you know, there's lots to fight for, and we're going to keep on pushing and everything else." And I think actually that's Lewis doing what Toto should be doing.
He'd be raging inside and behind closed doors.
Of course. But you know, that's Lewis actually just thinking, you know, thinking not of Lewis, because. Yeah, there were years past when he'd expect the dummy. I know he would, because and he's such a changed person now. And you know, he has become this sort of, well, yeah, almost this sort of team leader figure. But from his point of view, whatever he says on team radio, which he knows is going to be broadcast to the world, underneath all, he must be thinking, really?
Yeah, he must.
Really? Another year. I mean, I worked this out, okay? So, let's say, forget 2023. So, okay?
Yeah.
2024, and let's say the championship is decided towards the end of the year. If that champion were Lewis, the next oldest person to have won a world title was Jack Brabham, which by then would have been 58 years ago. Even if you...
Older guys tend not to win F1 championship.
Well, okay, so Nigel won one when he was just 39. Yeah. But even that, by next year, will be 32 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, Mario won one when he was 38. Prost won one when he was 38 or 39. But all those champions, even though, to me, those guys sound like sort of contemporaries, it's all a very long time ago. No one in the last 30 years, so the last generation... of that age has won a title.
Yeah.
If anybody can do it, clearly it's Lewis. But he must be thinking, Is it? Well, maybe he isn't. Maybe he is as motivated as ever, and, you know, I don't know. But I just feel a bit sorry for him, because I think he just had every reason to expect that, having really, really, you know, after the nightmare of Abu Dhabi 2021,
yeah,
and then the sort of, you know, the adding the insult to the injury of the 2022 season, you know, I think he must have thought, well, we'll be in with a shout this year.
Mm. I'm sure he did. And he, who knows how long he'll go on, but he probably doesn't have years and years and years for Mercedes to get their act together.
Except he'll say Fernando, won't he?
Well, that's right, and Fernando's still racing like he's 24, and perhaps that gives Lewis some kind of inspiration.
I mean, let us say, you know, Max fell under the proverbial number 59 bus,
yeah,
and they put Fernando in that car, he would be world champion, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, you know, a bloke, yeah, so I think it is possible for a man in his 40s to do it, to become world champion, even now, even though it's been so many, such a long time since anything like that has ever happened. But I think you have to have an absolutely extraordinary person. And, you know, I think Fernando is turning out to be this, I mean, this incredible figure. And not just for his speed over a lap, but for the fact that he was, you know, I tweeted something the other day, you know, when he won his first race, which I think was in 2003, Max's dad was in it.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? That is amazing.
And to be that competitive over that period of time.
To still care that much.
To still care, and to still be that racy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to be a certain sort of very, very special person. And, you know, maybe Lewis is that person. Maybe Lewis in 3-4 years' time will still be out there, still knocking it away. But I'd understand if he just got to the stage where he just thought, this isn't happening.
Yeah.
Hope he doesn't.
Oh, Mercedes. So, quick word on McLaren, because they get a wooden spoon as well. Dreadful.
It looked dreadful. It looked okay, so they had problems, didn't they?
Yeah.
So Piastri had to retire, and Lando had to keep on coming at Davis in pneumatics, top. So, actually, even though he was in the process of being lapped, there was a bit when Lewis and Fernando were having their lovely little battle, and Lando was there, and he stayed with them.
Yeah, did you note what tyres he was on? I didn't see. So maybe it's the same tyres, and maybe he was there on pace, but I'm just aware there might have been a tyre offset.
I can't ask that question.
Yeah, but he did stay with them. Potentially there's something in that car, but deary me, I mean,
relative to what they would be expecting from the season, I would be more worried were I Toto than if I were I Zach. I think Zach will think, well, that was a terrible weekend, and those things happen in Formula One, and we may not be right up the front, but there are reasons, and, you know, and there is something to play for relative to their expectations. And the thing is, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, if most teams had had Mercedes the weekend that Mercedes had, where they came, what did they come, fourth and sixth? Fourth and fifth?
Mercedes fourth and sixth, did they?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Lewis was fourth.
Yes. No, Lewis was fifth. Because Sainz was fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, Max, Perez, Fernando,
Sainz, Lewis. Okay. But even so for most teams, that'd be a result, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you were, if Aston Martin had that result last season, they would have been absolutely cock-a-hoop. But it's the expectations, isn't it? And Mercedes, you know, having come off that record-breaking win of however many constructors' championships it was, and however many drivers' championships.
Yeah.
But we do see this happen in Formula One, don't we? You know, we saw it happen with, you know, with Michael in the 2000s. You know, just because you're up there, you know, people begin to assume that you're invincible.
Yeah.
You may even begin to assume that you're invincible. But sooner or later, someone's going to come along and just do a better job. And at the moment, there are two, arguably three teams that are doing that.
Yeah, extraordinary. So final word on F1.
Yeah.
I interviewed about a year ago, just over a year ago, actually, start of 2022, I interviewed Frank Durney.
Uh-huh.
For a TI story, and he was brilliant. And that this is, he's one of the great F1 aerodynamicists.
He is.
Several world championships with Williams. And I specifically remember him saying that he rates, this was at the start of 22, he said he rates Dan Fallows very highly, and he thinks Aston Martin might be one to watch out for in 22. Now, clearly, that wasn't quite right. And when I watched the season unfold, I thought, oh, Frank, maybe you don't actually, maybe you're not so in touch with all the latest things. But look what's happened now.
When did Dan go to Aston Martin?
I think it was at the end of 21.
So the end 21, the 22 car's already done, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, okay, so I don't know when it was, but yeah, it's going to take him a bit of time.
It's quite possible that actually this is the first car that he's really, really
exactly
had a good go at.
Yeah, so Frank called it. Well done, Frank Dernie. Okay, there we go. Well, we've got another Grand Prix in a couple of weeks, so maybe the order
where are we going next? Saudi next?
Saudi Arabia. For that mega little street circuit.
Yeah. It's quite scary, isn't it?
Yeah, particularly qualifying.
It's really fast.
Ask Mick Schumacher.
Speed camera ahead.
And there you go, speed camera ahead. Oh, good, we've got some background. There's three of us presenting this episode.
There's Hugh, me and Waze.
So, let's see. Let's see what happens next time out. But, it was ominous. Right, you have just mentioned it.
Go on.
We've been running a search over on our social media accounts, particularly our Twitter page, for the greatest Formula One driver of all time. Now, that came to an end on Friday evening, just gone. And it was Ayrton Senna and Lewis Hamilton who worked their way through all the rounds into the final. They went head-to-head in what was actually the closest of the... It was 15 poles that we ran throughout the whole contest. Which is great, that's how it should be, isn't it? The final should be the most hotly contested one. And Lewis got 56% of the vote, so he won.
He won. In politics, 56%.
Camera ahead.
Sorry about Waze. In politics, 56% of the vote is a landslide, isn't it?
Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, fair play. I thought, I don't know what I thought, I really couldn't call it. And, you know, there are an awful lot of people who go, well, yes, it's recency bias. And I think that may well play a part in it. You know, if you do the poll again in 100 years' time, would Lewis still win it? Don't know. But, you know, we had 24 drivers, and we whittled them down over a fortnight to just two. And, the thing is, it's... People say there's no such thing as the greatest of all time, and, you know, I completely agree with them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I completely agree with them. You know, how do you compare Lewis to Fangio? Well, one way you do it is you bring Fangio back to life and stick him in a, in a modern Formula One car, and then you stick Lewis in a 250F and see how they get on. I mean, it's just everything is so different, isn't it? You know, it's not just the cars, it's not just the circuits, it's the peril. You know, a pretty familiar theme of modern Formula One drivers when they drive old Formula One cars is they just go, I can't believe they even thought about racing these things.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have been completely insane. I mean, these things are just death traps. And that's not even really, really old Formula One cars. So you can't compare, can you?
Not really.
At the same time, you know, how would Fangio have put up with, you know, 57 laps of, you know, 4-5G in every corner?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, he wouldn't, would he? He would, you know, he would have passed out. So you know, it's but so it was all just a bit of fun, and I was a bit surprised that some people were taking it very seriously.
They really did,
and there was a bit of me was quite pleased that they did, because you know it shows that there was passion and there was interest, and you know, good on them. But you know, I don't think you can ask whether did the right driver win it. I think it's a sort of QED thing, isn't it? You know, it was an entirely democratic vote. People chosen at random, and the person with the most votes won. So yes, the right person won it. Whether you agree with that or not depends on your point of view.
And lots of people have pointed out that we clearly have a mostly British audience.
Yeah.
And they voted for a British driver. That's another fair point. And as you say, it's just a bit of fun. But also, you know, we had 20,000 votes cast across the whole thing.
Yeah.
Decent sample size, knowledgeable audience.
Yes.
And, you know, for instance, Niki Lauda dumped Jackie Stewart out in the first round.
Who'd have thought that? I never saw that coming.
Beating a Scotsman.
Yeah?
So, you know, it's not like people voting were entirely nationalistic about it.
No, I mean, they were both three-time world champions, so they're actually quite comparable. I'm just trying to think if their careers overlapped. I think they might have done. I think Nicky raced in 73. Stuart's last season was 73. I think Nicky raced in 73. So, you know, they weren't that far apart in time. They certainly weren't that far apart in achievement. I think that Nicky has this, rightly, this sort of heroic quality to him. Because, obviously, because of the Nürburgring accident and how he came back. And also, he was also very visible until, you know, very shortly before he died, because of his role with the Mercedes team. But yeah, it was a good fun thing to do, and we're going to do more. Somebody suggested that we do the greatest racing car of all time. And I really like the sound of that. And if we did that, we're not just going to keep it to Formula One. We'll, you know, so you can have
speed camera ahead,
maybe even competition cars. So we'll, why don't we do that greatest competition, so we can have rally cars in there.
Dan
will be on getting every single possible device he can muster to vote for some Subaru or something. And we can have, you know, sports cars and Formula One cars and any other cars you like, Can-Am cars, and yeah, that'll be fun. So we might do that in a few weeks' time.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone who took part and chipping in with your points of view as well. And well done for the vast majority of you managed to keep it mature and sensible and grown up. But honestly, discussing Formula One drivers and how they compare on social media these days is just bait to idiots,
actually.
And there's so much toxicity out there around this topic and around F1 at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's easy enough to avoid it, and you can just disregard it because it's quite silly and petulant. But it is bizarre how upset and worked up people get about this.
What I find bizarre is how important it appears to be to them, that they get that worked up and that upset about it. I mean, it's just a sport, and I know that, you know, you can't just say, you know, there's that thing about football, isn't it? It's not life is more important than that. It's, you know, it's, but it is, and also, you know, it's just opinion, and people coming on and just saying, you know, saying that other people's opinion is just wrong.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a wrong opinion. You might not agree with it, but the point about an opinion is it's an opinion, and it's just your point of view.
Yeah.
So yeah, but actually, we had some. You always will. But there wasn't much, and I think that probably, and also, you know, the people who were posting the really silly stuff, none of them follow us. They've just picked it up from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So amongst the people who, you know, actually follow us on Twitter. And if you don't, please do, because, you know, we're going to be more active there, and, you know, and it's our way of just communicating with you on a sort of instantaneous basis when something happens. You know, so among people of those do, it was a good humoured, closely fought, enjoyable contest, and it wasn't any more or any less than that.
Yeah. Again, thanks all. We'll do more. Okay, let's move on, because last week, we're lucky boys, aren't we? We're on our way now to drive a couple of special cars. I won't reveal what they are just yet. But last week we did something quite similar. We went to go and visit Girardo & Co.
Yes.
Max Girardo's really quite spectacular. You can't call it a used car dealership, can you?
Well, you can try.
Yeah, it's a very high-end performance and luxury and racing car sales, whatever. But it's an extraordinary facility in Oxfordshire, and when you go into their big barn, it was a cow shed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's not anymore. It's a beautiful spot now. But when you go in there, honestly, 20, 30 really beautiful, rare, quite extraordinary cars.
I mean, really, really rare. And those are just the ones that they got on show. We are allowed to have a quick peek in the storeroom as well. And there's.
Yeah.
There's some amazing stuff in there. So the first thing that happens, you open the door, and there's a Ferrari 512S looking back at you.
Yeah, amazing.
Car which came
speed camera ahead,
which was on the podium at Monza in 1970, driven by, you know, Jackie Ickx and John Surtees and people like that. And it's one of the most jaw-droppingly beautiful cars that's ever been created. It was obviously the car that Ferrari created to combat the Porsche 917. Didn't quite manage it, but if looks were any indication of speed, it would have been the fastest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So yes, and I decided that I would fulfil a lifetime dream and sit in it and discover that I couldn't, because I didn't fit. But anyway, yeah, that's not actually what we were there to do.
No, so we were there to drive a couple of cars. And actually, we spoke about this on the podcast a little while ago, didn't we? And we said that we should get you in a Countach because you'd only driven a bad example and you didn't think very much of it at all.
Correct.
And so this was your opportunity to have another go in one and see if actually the car was better than that one example let on. Now, we're not going to give it all away now because you're going to write a piece for the Intercooler, and we shot this car and the one that I drove on the same day. The shots by Andy Morgan, brilliant photographer, are superb. I can't wait for you all to see them. But can you kind of give us summary thoughts or say a little something about the experience?
Well, okay. All I'm going to say for now is I have wanted for a while to go back and revisit some of the cars that have become, you know, it's probably the world's most overused word, particularly when it comes to describing things like this, but have genuinely become iconic. And I think a Countach is an iconic car, particularly if you're a person of a certain age whose bedroom walls were covered in pictures of these things. And I did have that experience where I drove one a while back, and it was a bit rubbish, and I have been rude about Countaches on this podcast and other places ever since, but always qualifying it with the knowledge that, you know, the car I drove may not have been representative of it. So it's going to be part of a sort of an occasional series where we're going to do, you know, some might say this is just an excuse for me to go off and drive some fun cars, but what I want to do is that these cars, which were so lionized and lauded when they were new, which is why they're, is iconicity even a word?
We could make it one. Language of
Words. It's where their iconic status came from. I'm going to go and have another look at them. And I'm not going to approach them with a jaundiced eye, but I'm going to look at them with a sort of benefit of hindsight and just go, are they really all they were cracked up to be? And that's really why I went and drove this Countach. Now, it was a it was an LP5000S. In some regions, they're called the 500S. So this is a sort of it's not a QV, which was the last one, which had the 48 valve cylinder heads. It's a 4.8 litre. So it's a kind of early 80s car, this one. And in some regards, it was absolutely what I expected, and in others, it wasn't. And I'm afraid I'm really going to annoy you now, because if you want to find out what I'm talking about, you'll have to read the piece, which we will post on the Intercooler website and on the app sometime in the next few days. There's a small matter of me having to write it before we do, but I shall get around to that this week. I'll make a commitment now. It's by the Monday evening, by the time it is, within a week, it'll be out there.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that.
And you drove another car for another reason.
Yeah, so I'm starting a new series as well. I think I'm going to call it I Have Never, and it's just... Never Have I Ever, yeah, exactly. One of those. It's the cars that again, the iconic cars that I just haven't driven before.
Because you're 7 years old.
Because I'm 70, well, I wish, I'm 36. But, you know, there are plenty of legendary performance cars that I just haven't had a sniff at before. And so I'm going to start ticking off some of those, which I think will be a fun thing to do. The point is, I'm coming at them fresh, anew. You know, I haven't been anywhere near them. So I can offer a totally original, unbiased, I suppose, perspective on what these cars are actually like to drive.
No rose-tinted spectacles.
That's right.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't have, you know, unforgettable drives in these cars 10, 20, 30 years ago, and that's going to colour my judgment at all. No. I'm coming at them totally fresh. So the first one was a Ferrari 550 Maranello, which, do you know, I never... when I was reading the car magazines as a kid, I didn't get them, or I chose not to like them, or whatever it was. But I wasn't into the 550 Maranello. But now I think they look stunning. I'm not going to give it away because I will write about this car in the next couple of weeks. And again, it's been photographed by Andy Morgan. It was fantastic. I'm not going to say any more, but it really, really was fantastic, that thing. So yeah, we've both got these new series coming. And we're going to be doing more with Gerardo & Co. because they have access to some mega cars, really, really special cars, rally cars, race cars, but road cars as well. And working with those guys, well, they make it straightforward, don't they? They make it really easy to go up there.
But they're also just colossal enthusiasts.
Yeah, they love it.
They just really love it. They're not people who are doing that because that's their job and that's how they get paid. You go up there and everybody, they're like, come and look at this. And they just want to share the love, don't they?
Yeah,
they do. And we like people like that.
Yeah. And it's great because they've got the cars, we've got the audience. So we go over there, borrow a couple of special machines, write about them, and hopefully all of you lot get to read about cars that you wouldn't otherwise. So that's the whole idea. We're going to do much more. And I can't wait. So look out for these new series, Andrew driving and sort of reevaluating the Iconics, and me driving for the first time the great cars that I've never been anywhere near before. And actually, as it happens, we're not on our way to drive two cars, we're on our way to drive three cars, one of which, the third of which, is going to be another in my new series, so I'm very much looking forward to that as well. Now, we were going to talk about best-sounding engine configurations, but...
Have we blathered on too much?
We have blathered on too much, and it's too good a topic to rattle off in 5 or 10 minutes, so let's save that one, park that one. Because we definitely need to come on to that. There's so much to say about it. So we have got a listener question coming up. And that one's going to take a few minutes, actually. So,
oh, God.
Yeah. And we're both going to have to... We haven't done any prep for this one, so we're going to be...
I don't even know what it is.
On the fly.
You at least know what it is.
I do. But you'll be fine. So, but before we come to the listener question, please, everyone, go and rate and review the podcast. But also... You're probably listening on the Apple Podcast app. You might be listening on Spotify. You might be listening on Spotify. Whichever it is, just hit the follow or subscribe button.
Please.
It means you won't miss one. But also, it really does us a favour. So please go and do that. And as you know, we've got some great stories coming to the Intercooler soon. So why not go and download the app or visit the website, the-intercooler.com, and start your 1 month free trial and see what it's all about. So the listener question comes from Gareth John. Okay, it's a complicated one. At each budget level, and his budget levels are 2,000, 5,000, 10, 20, 50, 100,000 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
What are the best cars for tackling Britain's potholed roads?
Oh my goodness.
So £2,000, and you need something that's going to cope with the British road network at the end of a cold, frosty winter. You know what it's like when the roads are crumbling.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in something with low profile tyres. You don't want to be in a low car.
Blimey.
£2,000. Well, I've got one.
Go on. I'm so glad because I don't.
The VW Passat.
So what are we looking for? We're looking for cars that are robust.
Yeah.
Cars that
ride.
Cars that ride.
Cars that probably have nice pillowy tyres.
A nice bit of sidewall.
Yeah.
Yeah, Passat is good.
Maybe a bit of wheel travel.
Yeah. There was a time before SUVs became a thing where the answer to most sensible questions was a Passat Estate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I like a Passat. It knows exactly what it's trying to do, that car.
Yeah.
£5,000, that might be the Passat again. Any off-roaders or 4x4s?
Well, I mean, there are. You know, you could probably get quite a nice Freelander for that kind of money. Whether that's necessarily... Well, I mean, something like that, actually. I think, actually, those sort of second-hand compact SUVs are just sort of all-purpose, you know, disposable things for doing that sort of job. I think, you know, I think they work... So there you go. I mean, the best Freelander you can get for £5,000 and you'll be able to get quite a nice one, I would think.
Yeah. £10,000, I mean... I'm thinking saloon cars now with a comfy ride. I think we're going to save the S-Class for a bit later on because I'm not sure you want to spend £10,000 on an S-Class.
Speed camera ahead.
Thank you. So what are we going to say? Maybe a 5 Series?
You just don't want anything with any kind of... Because apart from, you know, you don't want anything with any kind of low profile on it, do you?
No.
Because, you know, quite apart from the ride quality... implications. It's just the damage you're going to do to your wheels if you go and thunk one of these things.
Yeah, which is so easily done.
And, you know, and older cars just tend to have lower profile tyres, don't they?
They do. They do, actually. That's probably the bigger part of it. 20 grand, what am I going to say? I'm going to save... Well, maybe a 20 grand S-Class is a feasible thing. Maybe that's a viable proposition. But the point... Yeah, I mean, an S-Class...
Okay,
ride so serenely, you're just not going to know what's going on in the road level.
When's the Range Rover going to come into the conversation? Because it has to, doesn't it?
It really does. Well, I was going to save that for 100 grand, because technically 100 grand does buy a new Range Rover. And you've got a couple hundred quid in your pocket.
Yeah, a new Range Rover with no options on it at all.
That 330e has got a Nürburgring sticker on it.
Oh, we're following a 330e Touring. It does have a Nürburgring.
It's been to the ring.
Yeah, good right. lad. Good lad.
Maybe he's a listener. For 50 grand then, I reckon that's a lovely budget for a previous shape Range Rover. You get a mega one for that, wouldn't you?
You would. Yeah. Okay, so what is the ultimate pothole car? I think it is a Range Rover, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
But the thing is, you know, most Range Rovers come on sort of 22-inch rims. You don't want those.
No.
Whatever the smallest rim is, that's the one you want.
Yeah. Load of ground clearance.
Yeah, because the thing is that wheels and tyres, whether you're on the 23-inch rim or the 19-inch rim, for a car, they have to have the same rolling radius. So what you lose in rim, you make up in sidewall, which means ride comfort and pothole resistance. So always go for the small wheels.
Yeah.
And our friends who are car designers will be shouting at there. they're just better.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I think we've covered that one off. Thank you, Gareth John, for your question. Keep getting these questions across because they're good fun. And we'll do another one next week.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.